Hey there, friend, and welcome to the Trauma Mama podcast, where we talk about what trauma is, how it happens, what it does to us, and most importantly, what we can do about it. I'm your Trauma Mama and host, Alexandra Pratt. I want to thank the producer of our theme song, Bay Window. He's a singer, songwriter, and producer from the San Francisco Bay Area. In this episode, we're going to talk about the history of trauma, the different types of trauma, what types of events can be traumatic, and briefly review some of the psychological and physical responses that occur from it. But before we get into the meat of this episode, I'd like to share with you some background on myself, to show you where I'm coming from and explain why this topic is so important to me. I've spent years on my recovery, working to overcome trauma from childhood and adulthood experiences. I was first diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder when I was about 15. I didn't understand what that meant, but it was an explanation for why I had these panic attacks and fainted. The first time that showed up in my life, I was in fourth grade in a sex ed class, and they had put on a video about AIDS. Suddenly, something started happening to my body, and as I tried to exit the classroom, I collapsed on the floor and blacked out in front of everyone. And these episodes continued to occur throughout my childhood, adolescence, and young adulthood. In middle school and high school, I was excused completely from taking classes that would trigger these panic attacks. I graduated high school with honors without ever taking health, sex ed, biology, or anatomy. And this is just one of the ways that trauma had taken over my life. As an adult, I realized that behaviors I had learned in order to survive no longer served me, and in fact, they were quite harmful and destructive. I was perpetuating detrimental behaviors and staying stuck in toxic and abusive relationships. For long periods of time, I've felt incapacitated by the draining discomfort of daily anxiety and the heavy weight of depression. I would spend most of my time in bed, the only place I felt safe, where I could avoid things and shut down from the world. In my lifetime, I have been diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder, panic disorder, obsessive-compulsive disorder, a medical phobia, and major depressive disorder. I've been in and out of therapy since I was about 11. I've done talk therapy, EMDR, which stands for eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. I've done CBT, which stands for cognitive behavioral therapy, and most recently, DBT, which stands for dialectic behavioral therapy. I have read a myriad of self-help books and participated in a 12-step support group. For years, I was participating in therapy, but as I got older, I felt like I was getting increasingly anxious and depressed. I was in therapy, so why wasn't I resolving the trauma and finding peace and inner happiness? It was DBT that helped me to transform my life. In this podcast, we'll talk about a lot of different paths to recovery, but you'll find that I often refer to the DBT approach because of how practical and effective it's been for me. And I'd like to clarify that I am not a doctor or a professionally trained therapist or counselor. I am speaking from personal experience and research, and I'd like to share what I've learned in hopes of educating, validating, and inspiring others who are suffering. After a year of intensive dialectic behavioral therapy, which I graduated from this summer in 2019, for the first time in my life, I found myself living in the light, on the other side of the all-consuming darkness of pain and terror that seemed to control and dictate most of my behaviors and perceptions. I'd like to share about what I've experienced on my mental health journey in hopes of informing and offering hope to those who are struggling to recover and heal. These are tough conversations to have. In fact, they're so tough you may find that others in your life are unwilling or incapable of having these conversations. But it's okay, because we can start this conversation together. Have you ever been told to just get over it? Or that you're being overdramatic and you just like the attention? That you'll grow out of it? That time will heal? Well, that's bullshit, because time doesn't heal. We must heal ourselves. So let's talk about what trauma is. What does it mean to be traumatized? I'd like to share a quote from the author Jessica Stern, who wrote a book called Denial, A Memoir of Terror. She writes, "Some people's lives seem to flow in a narrative. Mine had many stops and starts." That's what trauma does. It interrupts the plot. It just happens, and then life goes on. No one prepares you for it. And that quote really resonated with me, because it really does seem like your life comes to a complete halt while the rest of the world is spinning very fast around you still. Trauma is the response to a deeply distressing or disturbing event that overwhelms an individual's ability to cope. Trauma is a fear reaction. Other synonyms for the word trauma include disturbing, shocking, distressing, disquieting, upsetting, damaging, scarring, injurious, harmful, painful, hurtful, agonizing, chilling, awful, alarming, devastating, horrifying, terrifying, and excruciating. The DSM, which stands for the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, defines trauma as a direct personal experience of an event that involves actual or threatened death or serious injury, or when you witness this type of threat of physical integrity happen to someone else. When something traumatic happens, it is often so overwhelming that it can be hard to come to terms with what has actually happened. It can be very difficult to accept the reality of it. And the experience is different from anything else you've ever gone through before. It can make you question things that you always thought were to be true. You might no longer believe that the world is a safe place, that people are generally good, or that you are in control of what happens to you, or that you deserve love. When people talk about their world being turned upside down after a traumatic event, it means these big picture beliefs have been shattered. Now, I'm a big history buff, so I'd like to read an excerpt from a website called newperspectivesinc.com. They detailed a really brilliant history into the concept of psychological trauma and the people who've studied it and brought it to the modern mental health world and understanding that we have of it today. So I'm going to read pretty much verbatim a nice detailed little history. Here we go. Prolonged exposure to violence and trauma has severe effects on an individual's psychological state. The need for a model of intervention is paramount to help the individual cope with life's tragedies. We must first define the nature of trauma and crisis, and then view the current models of treatment. Crisis refers to a perception of an event or situation as an intolerable difficulty that exceeds the resources and coping skills of a person. The event or situation can manifest itself in many forms, but it is an emotional reaction to the event that causes the state of crisis. This crisis can be too overwhelming for the individual and may cause the individual to respond in a pathological manner. The state of crisis may cause a person to respond with ideations of suicide and homicide. The crisis itself has the potential to cause serious damage to an individual's cognitive and behavioral states. Individuals in crisis have suffered from a psychological trauma. Psychological trauma is an affliction of the powerless. Trauma renders a person helpless and powerless due to the overwhelming force of the event. The traumatic event causing the crisis alters the individual's beliefs of a just and fair world. The event or situation destroys the individual's sense of control, connection, and meaning. The individual's mind responds to this trauma similar to the body responding to distress. The mind will attempt to reach a state of homeostasis. The psychological trauma represents a condition of acute distress causing a disturbance in the balanced state, thus creating psychological disequilibrium. As a result of this response, the individual will suffer from acute distress paired with functional impairment. The degree of distress and functional impairment can fluctuate from mild to severe. Without some form of relief from this crisis, the individual may become increasingly more disturbed, and their behavior may be more disruptive to normal functioning. It is clear psychological trauma will alter an individual's mental status. Crisis intervention is used to provide first aid for this altered mental state that will help reduce the individual's distress and promote adaptive behavior. There are many theories surrounding psychological trauma that attempt to provide the much-needed first aid for individuals in crisis. The study of psychological trauma has its roots in the later part of the 19th century with the work of a French neurologist named Jean-Martin Charcot. Charcot was the first person to attempt to study and define a disease known as hysteria. Before Charcot's research, hysteria had been considered a disease with incoherent and incomprehensible symptoms. Charcot was able to document in great detail the development and characteristics of the disease. He was able to demonstrate the disease was psychological in nature. He demonstrated his theory by artificially producing the disease's symptoms in patients by using hypnosis. However, Charcot was unable to produce the theory of how to intervene and create solutions for treatment. So, it was the goal of his students, including Sigmund Freud and William James and Pierre Janet, to research the nature and possible cure for hysteria. Both Janet and Freud deduced that the symptoms of hysteria were the result of psychological trauma. They believed the symptoms were the result of an altered state of consciousness produced by the unbearable emotional reaction to the event. Janet called the reaction dissociation, and Freud called it double consciousness. Janet and Freud discovered symptoms could be alleviated if the patient was able to verbalize the traumatic event stored in the unconscious memory. Janet would call this treatment psychological analysis, and Freud would eventually call it psychoanalysis. The work by Janet and Freud, and Freud's counterpart, Joseph Breuer, gave birth to modern psychotherapy. This method of treatment would allow a person to discuss the hysteria in a manner that would be conducive to alleviate the symptoms. Psychoanalytic theory dominated the research into trauma for the later part of the 19th century and the early 20th century. Psychoanalysis became a study of the internal vicissitudes of fantasy and desire, disassociated from the reality of experience. Freud based most of his research on the exploration of women's sexual lives. Freud found a correlation between sexually abused women and hysterical behavior. Freud later recanted his study of hysterics in women, reporting that the women in his test group were actually not sexually abused and that they had made up the abuse. So, the recantation was a turning point away from the study of hysteria and trauma as associated with the unconscious. After the death of Charcot and the recantation of Freud's work, the study of psychological trauma resurfaced during World War I. Charles Myers, a British psychologist, was one of the first to examine soldiers who suffered from a term he called shell shock. This nervous disorder was thought to be the result of the concussive effects of exploding shells. It was later discovered, though, that soldiers who did not see combat would also suffer the same nervous conditions. The prolonged exposure to war and the aftermath produced hysterical symptoms in men that was very similar to the symptoms reported in women studied by Charcot and Freud, who had been sexually abused. However, the diagnosis of combat neurosis was not viewed as being honorable. Traditionalists questioned the moral integrity of a soldier and questioned whether to treat him and his disorder. They viewed the soldier's affliction with combat neurosis as a coward, an inferior human being. And a British psychiatrist named Lewis Yeland held on to the belief of these traditionalists, and he used a very harsh method to treat such patients. He treated them with punishment and shame. For example, if a soldier had become mute due to the effects of psychological trauma experienced by war, Yeland would apply electric shocks to the soldier's throat until the soldier spoke. Yeland would apply the shocks after tying the soldier to a chair while yelling patriotic jargon for hours. The traditionalist continued its form of treatment until W.H.R. Rivers, a physician, offered a more humane treatment based on the psychoanalytic principles. His work with a young officer, Siegfried Sassoon, demonstrated the humane approach to treatment that could help soldiers return to combat without hysterical symptoms. Rivers' approach proved to be successful, and after a few years after World War I, sadly, the interest in combat neurosis faded. Abram Gardner, an American psychiatrist schooled in Vienna, began his research of combat neurosis in the 1920s. Gardner first attempted to develop a theory from the psychoanalytic point of view on combat neurosis. However, he eventually abandoned the theory and replaced it with a framework based on the research of Genet. In 1941, Gardner published his second book, The Traumatic Neurosis of War, which eventually gave way to his development of the modern framework of traumatic syndromes. During World War II, Gardner joined another American psychiatrist named Herbert Spiegel to revise his texts and begin treatment based on the work of Rivers. Gardner and Spiegel found soldiers to be suffering from the loss of attachment to their fighting unit. The treatment would then have to be relatively close to the battlefield and include recreations of the traumatic event through hypnosis. This form of treatment proved effective, but Gardner and Spiegel warned the military psychiatrists that the effects of treatment would not be permanent due to the lasting effects of trauma on the mind, and this treatment style stayed in practice until the end of World War II, when once again the study of trauma would fade. The Vietnam War would be the next reappearance in the interest of combat neurosis by two American psychiatrists, Robert Lifton and Sham Shatan. Lifton and Shatan grew an idea, and they developed rap groups for combat veterans suffering from psychological traumas of war and anti-war sentiment. These rap groups were get-togethers and meetings that offered soldiers a place to discuss their experience and raise awareness about the effects of war. By the 1970s, these rap groups spread across the nation, forcing the American Veterans Administration to begin research into the effects of combat exposure on soldiers. It was also during this time the feminist movement began to raise awareness about the everyday violence in the sexual and domestic lives of women. Women suffered the same effects of combat neurosis in their civilian lives. The effects of rape, sexual abuse, and sexual violence were more prevalent in women than trauma of war in men. Freud had touched upon this sexual issue before his recantation several decades prior to the feminist movement. In 1980, the American Psychiatric Association developed the category of post-traumatic stress disorders. This category was based off the work of Cardner, and it includes the traumatic symptoms suffered by all affected by trauma. This category of disorders gave rise to the challenge of treating such disorders, and the theories of crisis and crisis intervention began to take form amidst the newly found appreciation for traumatic stress. So that's a pretty in-depth look of the development around the psychological study of how trauma affects our behaviors and our emotions and even our bodies. So let's talk about the types of trauma. There are three main types of trauma: a one-time event, an ongoing event, or a combination of the two. One-time events, such as an accident, injury, or violent attack, is known as acute trauma. Ongoing, relentless stress, such as living in a crime-ridden neighborhood, battling a life-threatening illness, or being abused repetitively, this is known as chronic trauma. A combination of the two is called complex trauma. And it's when you experience multiple different types of traumatic events. From there, we can also break down the types of trauma more specifically based on the four following identities: impersonal, interpersonal, identity, and community. Impersonal trauma occurs randomly, without intention, such as an accident or natural disaster. Interpersonal trauma is deliberately executed by another person onto another person. Identity trauma is ongoing discrimination, devaluation, and even violence based on the victim's sense of self-identity with gender, race, ethnicity, sexual orientation. And community trauma, also known as intergenerational or historical trauma, involves ongoing discrimination, devaluation, and even violence targeting certain groups. So what types of events are traumatic? Trauma is a broad term used to describe a wide range of incidents. So I'm just going to list the most common. Rape or sexual assault. And I'd like to note here that behaviors that are sexually abusive often involve bodily contact, such as sexual kissing, touching, fondling, and intercourse. However, behaviors may also be sexually abusive even if they don't involve contact, such as exposure of the genitalia, verbal pressure for sex, or sexual exploitation in any way. Other types of traumatic events include physical assault, domestic violence, extreme verbal and emotional abuse, bullying and repeated harassment of any kind, terminal illness, school violence, community violence, medical trauma, wartime and combat experience, traumatic loss, when someone dies unexpectedly, natural disasters, accidents such as a car crash or a fire, and parental neglect. Neglect can mean failure to provide food, clothing, shelter, medical care, education, or proper supervision to a child, or exposing a child to a dangerous environment. And sadly, neglect is the most common form of abuse reported to child welfare authorities. Now, it's important to realize that trauma is very different to the other types of stressful events that occur in our lives. Other stressful events like the breakdown of a relationship or the slow death of a loved one through natural causes. These events can certainly affect a person's mental health, but they are not the same as the traumatic events I just described above. The reality of trauma is that it can come in any form and manifests itself in a variety of physical and psychological symptoms. People who go through these types of extremely traumatic experience often have many problems afterwards. The types of psychological symptoms from trauma affect us cognitively, behaviorally, psychologically, and even physically. Cognitive symptoms of trauma include intrusive thoughts of the event that may occur out of the blue, nightmares, visual images of the event known as flashbacks, loss of memory and concentration, disorientation and confusion, sudden dramatic mood changes and excessive inappropriate reactions to situations, feeling disconnected or numb, or disassociation, feeling out of your body, out of reality. Behavioral symptoms of trauma include avoidance of activities and places that trigger the memory of the event, even avoidance of things you used to like to do and people you love, social isolation and withdrawal, increased use of alcohol or drugs. Psychological symptoms of trauma include overwhelming fear, obsessive and compulsive behaviors, detachment from others and emotions, emotional numbing, depression, intense and extreme sadness and crying, guilt, shame, denial, emotional shock, disbelief, irritability, anger and rage, hopelessness, and lack of self-worth. But trauma just doesn't affect our thoughts and our behaviors. It's something that we feel in our bodies as well. Physical symptoms of trauma include tremendous fatigue and exhaustion, tachycardia, a condition that makes your heart beat more than 100 times per minute, edginess, extreme alertness, always on the lookout for warnings of potential danger, insomnia, chronic muscle pain throughout the body, sexual dysfunction, changes in sleeping and eating patterns, headaches and nausea, worsening of existing medical conditions, anxiety and panic attacks. Now let's take a moment and talk about what a panic attack feels like. It feels like trembling or shaking, pounding heart, rapid breathing, can't catch your breath, feeling choked up, a lump in your throat, a pit in your stomach, or your stomach is churning, feeling dizzy or faint. You might even pass out or throw up. You might start sweating. If you are unsure if you've experienced trauma, here are a few of the clinical questions you can ask yourself. Do any of the following of these things happen twice or more a week? Number one, upsetting thoughts or memories about the event that come into your mind against your will. Number two, upsetting dreams about the event. Number three, acting or feeling as though the event were still happening. Number four, feeling upset by reminders of the event. Number five, bodily reactions such as fast heartbeat, stomach churning, sweatiness, dizziness when you're reminded of the event. Number six, difficulty falling or staying asleep. Number seven, irritability or outbursts of anger. Number eight, difficulty concentrating. Number nine, heightened awareness of potential dangers to yourself and others. And finally, number 10, being jumpy or being startled at something unexpected. If this rings true to you, I am with you. You are not alone. These physical symptoms create a state of being called hyperarousal. And it can make it very difficult to do daily tasks, to take care of ourselves. And it's very natural to have some of these symptoms after experiencing a traumatic event. Sometimes people have very serious symptoms that go away after a few weeks. That's known as acute stress disorder. However, when the symptoms last more than a few weeks and become an ongoing problem, it could be PTSD, which stands for post-traumatic stress disorder. However, some people with PTSD don't show any symptoms for weeks or months after the event. And experts aren't sure why some people experience PTSD after a traumatic event while others do not. The truth is, at some point in our lives, most of us will go through a terrifying event. So this sounds like a lot to deal with on a daily basis, right? These are symptoms that don't just go away with time. We cannot sit and wait for recovery. We must seek out resources that can help us. We must do the work that therapy and self-improvement requires. And we must keep hope that one day we can live a more happy and harmonious life within our bodies. When you do this, you are doing more than just surviving. You are thriving. And personally, I do not like to identify as a survivor because it puts me in a victim role, and that's a role from which I cannot move forward from. So I consider myself to be a thriver, someone who rebloomed stronger and full of more radiant colors than before. And if you're listening to this podcast, then you're a thriver too. In my next episode, I'm going to go more in depth into the physical and emotional responses that happen during trauma, known as the flight, fight, freeze, and fawn response. And if you or someone you know is suffering and in crisis, I recommend reaching out to online counselors at suicidepreventiononline.org/chat. You can also text the crisis line by sending the word CONNECT in all caps to 741741. Or if you'd like to pick up the phone and call someone, you can call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 1-800-273-8255. Don't give up hope. Thank you for listening. Keep thriving.
Drama mama, yeah. Drama mama, 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 drama